Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. Here with me, as always, it's David Ramil, and we are back with a Monday mailbag, getting this out a little late for you guys, but with all of the DeMarcus Cousins news, we wanted a chance to put this thing together and really get into it, and we got a couple of new questions in this morning. So, I don't know. What do you say, David? Let's just get right into it.
Yeah, I mean, the All-Star break is over. We're feeling refreshed, and we're ready to answer everybody's questions. So an exciting second half of the season, although it's arguably less than a half, but still.
And thanks, as always, to those who sent us the questions. You can do that on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. All right, here's our first question, speaking of DeMarcus Cousins. I'm disappointed that the Heat didn't get Boogie. The Kings got a jar of jelly beans in return. We could have offered more. This from at HeatWeedGuy. It's a great Twitter handle.
Yeah. So more of a comment than a question, but I guess summing up a lot of what it seems like Heat Twitter and basketball Twitter in general seem to feel about the trade between the Sacramento Kings and the New Orleans Pelicans, who wound up exchanging basically complementary role players in a first-round pick that's protected, I think a top-three protected pick, in exchange for arguably one of the top 10 players in the league in DeMarcus Cousins. As far as the Heat is concerned, I think both you and I have seen that Miami's approached the trade deadline with a very conservative methodology. I think they're not really offering a whole heck of a lot. And while we haven't heard that they were necessarily interested in swinging a deal for Cousins, if they were involved, they probably were not offering too much. And we've also heard, I think, from, I want to say Howard Beck, that he tweeted out that there hasn't been much of a market for Cousins, which is surprising considering the level of talent. But I guess Sacramento has been taking pennies on the dollar just to try and move a guy like Cousins because of everything that he represents. There's been some controversy regarding the Sacramento TV play-by-play man or color analyst. I'm not sure who, but he was he set out a series of tweets basically condemning Cousins on his way out the door, saying we can finally be a team again. It seems like this oppressive yoke that Sacramento has been living under for so long with DeMarcus, there's just six seasons, but apparently they were tired of the whole Boogie experience and were ready to move on. So if the Kings got a jar of jelly beans, it seems like Miami was just offering a pack of Skittles. So I don't even know if that's...
Wait, Skittles are better than jelly beans.
Well, but a jar. I'm just using units of measurement, let's say. If it's a jar of jelly beans, it's just a pack of Skittles. I don't know.
Yeah, jars are larger than packs. Gotcha.
Generally speaking, yes, jars are larger than packs. Unless it's one of those big Halloween pound-sized bags that you get. But I think for the most part, it seems like Miami probably wasn't offering much. And maybe they just didn't want to change things around. Maybe they were hoping that they could pry him loose for, you know, even less pennies on the dollar than New Orleans offered. You know, you covered the Kings pretty regularly, so you probably have a lot more insight. What's your take on all this?
Well, I think, number one, it's clear that, you know, with all of the analytics and the insight that we have on these players nowadays, I think it's rare that, you know, the NBA fans, maybe NBA Twitter's perspective of a player and the league's perspective of a player are so dramatically different. But I think in this case it was. I mean, this is a situation where people on Twitter and fans making fake trades on the trade machine were thinking, is it worth Boston giving up the Brooklyn pick, which is probably going to be the top pick in the draft for DeMarcus Cousins, right? Like, is it worth them giving up the Brooklyn pick and, you know, a bunch of different players for Cousins? And in this situation, you know, this jar of jelly beans that New Orleans offered for Cousins didn't come close to what people were, you know, fake trading their way with the Celtics and deals with the Nuggets and all these other, and with the 76ers. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I figure why the reason that the difference is so dramatic is because, you know, fans probably look at Cousins and his versatility and his raw stats and his advanced stats and the way that he's been able to add a three-point shot and the general trend of appreciating the quote-unquote unicorns in the NBA, which Cousins is certainly a part of, and maybe just front offices being much more weary of guys who could be, you know, locker room problems or, you know, like that TV analyst said, a black cloud over the team. Like, this is something that front offices and coaches and GMs are really mindful of when it comes to the players that they want to bring in. I mean, we've seen players not nearly as talented as Cousins work their way out of the league because their locker room issues. And so most fans, they have, you know, they have access to NBA stats and obviously the games with League Pass. You can watch every Sacramento game of the season, you know, and you get access to these players via social media and the reporters, but you really don't have access to the locker room, right?
Right.
And, you know, I've been in that locker room, and I've always been pro-Cousins, right? Like, I've been in that locker room and still felt like the Heat should have been trading for, could have traded for Cousins or should have traded for Cousins. Obviously, I don't have the access that a lot of the inside reporters do, but I'm in that locker room, and I see that quote-unquote black cloud over that locker room, and to attribute it to Cousins is unfair.
Okay.
I think it's that that organization just doesn't know what it's doing. It's simply,
it doesn't feel right. It feels like it's dysfunctional, yeah.
It's extremely dysfunctional. Nobody knows who's in charge. From, you know, general manager, like, who's making the decisions? Is it the owner? Is it Divac, the general manager? Is it, you know, these other people that, you know, Kevin Arnovitz wrote about extensively and brilliantly in his piece for ESPN on, I think, the 16th of this of last month, right? It came out in January.
Yeah,
and,
it did, yeah.
And, you know, a month later, all of it's changing, but nobody knows who's in charge. And then just a year-to-year change at head coach. Nobody, like, it's a different head coach. Like, there's just nobody in charge here. Yeah. And... Yeah. And that, to me, is a major problem. Now, is Cousins absent of guilt? Absolutely not. I mean, he's slumped over in his locker all the time. He's not a locker room leader by any means. By any stretch of the imagination, he is not a locker room leader.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the points I think a lot of people assumed that if he was going to get traded, it would be to a locker room where there was already an established leader in place. And I don't think New Orleans is that place either. I don't think Anthony Davis strikes me as being the guy who's leading the team. He's still particularly young. He's even younger than Cousins. Right. He's still kind of trying to figure his way out. He's already dealt with injury. I just don't think he's the guy who's got the locker room under control yet. And
thing about that, though, is now, you know, Cousins doesn't have to be the face of a franchise. He's like the co-face of a franchise. So maybe that takes a little bit of the pressure off of both of them, both Davis maybe. And Cousins. Alvin Gentry is a guy that a lot of people talk very highly about. I've never had an opportunity to speak with him, but... you know, so overall, look, the Kings gave away Cousins basically is the perspective of fans. And maybe that's not the perspective of front offices. Maybe front offices are like, yeah, that sounds about right. But could the Heat have done that? Could they have offered more? Going back to our question, look, the Kings wanted a 2017 draft pick,
which
we didn't have. And they also wanted to, and can we just talk about this for a second? Like, Woj tweeted that a big part of the reason they traded Cousins for so little was that they were at a major risk of losing their top 10 pick, which if their pick falls out of the top 10, it goes to Chicago for whatever trade that the Kings made to make that happen. I don't even remember because they made so many bad trades. But if it falls out of the top 10, they lose their pick. So their reaction to that is to basically trade away a franchise player. It's like, haven't they heard of tanking? Like, I don't understand.
Right,
like, just play Aaron Aflalo 35 minutes a game. Like, I don't... Like, just be bad. Just, you're the Kings. You're really good at this. Just go
be bad. It's clear they just wanted to move on from DeMarcus and everything that he represents.
So they're going to keep their top 10 pick, right? They're going to get a 2017 pick from New Orleans. But that's it.
Yeah.
Which is surprising. Like, if you're the Kings, and this is part of the problem, can't you... Like, if you counteroffer New Orleans and like, okay, we want your 2017 pick, great. We also want your 2019 first round pick. Does New Orleans hang up the phone? They still make that trade, right? I mean, maybe this goes back to us having a very different perspective of Cousins than the rest of the league, but if it costed one more future first round pick, why wouldn't New Orleans do that to pair two of the top big men in the league together? Two top 20 players in the league.
I mean, I can't tell you. I don't really know. And I think sometimes I don't know that anybody has a good sense of what that front office is willing to do or unwilling to do. A lot of people assume, oh, no, they've got a good grasp of this. I started seeing people that I consider very knowledgeable about the world of basketball, part of basketball Twitter, whatever, and saying, you know, you've got to give Sacramento some credit. They'll be able to do something good for Boogie Cousins. This was hours before we started even getting a hint of a trade being worked out. And then they pull off this trade and you wind up with egg on your face whenever you defend the Sacramento organization, because it's just it becomes apparent that, that we don't really know what they're thinking, their line of thinking, and how or what they're willing to do next. And
I really question whether or not the Kings knew that they could trade for multiple first rounders. Going back to like Arnovitz's piece, like where he's like, they don't even know the rules of trades half the time.
What's
even possible? Like, I don't think that they even asked for a 2019 first-round pick. They were like, oh, the Stepien rule. That means we can't have multiple first-round picks or something. I've heard of that. I've read that on Wikipedia. It's like, I'm not sure they knew that they could ask for more picks.
It seems like they'd have, like, a bulletin board in Vlade's office with, like, 3.5 by 5.11 index cards saying, can't trade for first-rounder. Or, you know, it's like a bingo game almost of things that you can and can't do. And that's it. That's his knowledge of the CBA. And that's unfortunate because there are people supposedly in the front office that know what they're doing, but they keep making moves like this, and you have to question what they do know.
How is this any worse for, like, the competitive balance of the league than what Sam Hinkie was doing? Like, the league put in, like, they basically pushed Hinkie out of Philadelphia and implanted Brian Colangelo because they were worried about the competitive balance of the league or the competitive integrity of the league, right? Like, Hinkie, you're purposely tanking to get draft picks. That's not okay for the integrity
of the league. I think that's it, though.
Like, it's Sacramento. But how's that? Like, at least there's, like, a vision, right? Like,
no, look, right,
like,
no, the Sixers
are, like, kind of good now. Like, they're kind of, like, promising. It's like, they have a direction.
It's okay to suck if that's not your intention. But if you suck on purpose, we're going to put the smackdown on that. We don't want you sucking with a vision. We want you sucking because you're just completely inept and don't know what you're doing.
Complete ignorance. Like, it's just, it's, you don't know how to run this. Like, you just don't know the rules. You're not
good
at this.
And we're okay with that. We're okay with that. And I'm speaking from the NBA's
perspective. I seriously think the league has to step in. I think the league has to step in and say, you guys are a dumpster fire. This is not okay. If the league steps in for the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and steps in and gets rid of Hinkie and puts in Brian Colangelo, they ought to step into this. This is insane. It's absolutely ridiculous. But could the Heat have offered more? No, they didn't have a 2017 draft pick. And at that point, you're like, okay, trade Dragic, trade Whiteside. They don't want those guys, I guess. If the Kings have any direction, they don't want older players. They want to start young and start rebuilding, so they don't want those veterans. So then you're left, okay, a package of Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson. That's not as good as what New Orleans offered. That's not going to do it. So,
well, you know what, though? The one thing that Kings fans do have is a brand new, beautiful arena, to which see this team rebuild over the next few seasons, right?
It is a wonderful arena. That's like the best thing about the Kings is that arena. It's a great arena. I really enjoy it.
And Miami has a pretty decent arena, even for one that's, you know, somewhat older at this point. But the best thing about that arena is that you get to see the Miami Heat make their late season playoff push.
That's right. So, I think I know where you're going with this. I didn't catch it at first.
I thought it was subtle there, but I thought it was pretty clear.
I was thinking about the next question, but before we get to that question, you're right, David. I mean, the All-Star break is about to wrap up. The Heat play Friday, right? That's at Atlanta, but they'll be coming home pretty soon. And if you want to get tickets for that, there's only one way to do it. I don't know how many times we have to tell you guys. SeatGeek. It's the smartest way. It's the easiest way to find tickets for any Heat game that you want to see up close and in person at that beautiful arena you were talking about, David. There's nothing like being in American Airlines Arena for the Heat games. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats that you want for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere. And with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because they price compare for you. They do it for you, and then they give you a value with a big green dot that says this is good and a small red dot that says this is not so good. It does all the things. It does all the work for you. Every SeatGeek ticket is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you could shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence, aka you don't get ripped off by fakes. Best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate, simple. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LOHEAT, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your very first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today. So, kind of carrying on with that Kings situation, there's going to be some fallout. They have to make some decisions. And here's our next question. Is Matt Barnes worth a look? Or would he disrupt Miami's team chemistry? Now, this is based on a report that the Kings will waive Matt Barnes after completing the Cousins deal. This is from Ivan Mora, who is a writer at allyoucanheat.com. It's a good question, though. Is Barnes worth a look? What do you think, David?
Oh, absolutely not. He's got that weird vibe around the league, and I think you've talked to some people about him, and you know, or we've read at least about him that he's beloved, according to him and other players that he's played with, other teammates of his, that he's beloved by anybody he's ever played with and for. The teams that he's been on, be it, you know, the Clippers or Memphis or the Grizzlies or the Kings, he's well liked by his peers. He's the kind of guy that you want to have as far as, you know, he has your back and he'll get into a fight for you. Sure, man.
That's not true. That's the reports. That's like what you hear from the players. Like, oh, he's one of the guys that you want on your team. Those are players using cliches. That's not true, but go ahead.
No, go ahead. I mean, why would you say that?
It's not true. I don't think players enjoy playing with him necessarily. I think there are some players that enjoy playing with him. Like, I think Boogie Cousins did enjoy Matt Barnes being on his team because they were the same kind of hot-headed enforcer type, like they're not going to take any crap from anybody type thing. But I think a lot of players just kind of get sick of his stuff.
It's possible he probably burns out, you know, after a while. Like that kind of abrasive nature.
He's not like Udonis Haslem, where he's not like your abrasive is a great word because Haslem is not. Haslem is an enforcer, but he's a locker room leader. Matt Barnes is he's a goon. He's not a locker room leader, and there's a difference.
Right. Like I hearken back to the feeling that when he first joined the Clippers, you know, Chris Paul is a guy who talks a lot, and Matt Barnes is one of the few guys willing and able to say, you know what, just shut the hell up. We don't need to hear from you all the time. Quit your yammering or something along those lines. And you know, well, to your point, he's no longer with the Clippers, so he obviously wore that welcome, you know, rather thin. Is he worth a look? I think he's declining in athleticism. He's older than he should be at this point, or he's older than the Miami's timeline at this point. He can offer some outside shooting and some decent perimeter defense, not quite as good as it was. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if it's about the issue of team chemistry. I just don't know that we necessarily even need a guy like that. You know, considering what he offers and considering the fact that we're going to get Josh Richardson back at some point soon, we've got Roddy Magruder playing at a high level. We've got Deion Waiters, who provides excellent perimeter defense. And moreover, we've got James Johnson doing that, you know, from the forward position. I just don't see a real need to even add a guy like Barnes for a late season push. If we're going to make an upgrade, it's probably going to be at the power forward spot for somebody over Luke Babbitt to help spot, you know, provide some minutes there so that James Johnson comes off the bench and continues to be effective. I don't think it's necessarily for a guy who's more for a small forward position, even though Barnes can play the four occasionally, but he's a little undersized, I think. And I just don't see him as an upgrade. Yeah, I just don't see him as an upgrade over Babbitt, you know, and Babbitt fits in.
Roddy Magruder.
Oh, like he's certainly not over Magruder. I just don't even think Barnes is an upgrade over Babbitt, and that's saying something. You know, we've been critical of Babbitt the Rabbit in the past, and to say that Luke Babbitt is better than Matt Barnes at this point, then you know it's probably a big indication of how we feel about Barnes, or how I feel anyway.
I thought Barnes had some value for Sacramento. I did. I thought he came in and he provided them some. Because as much as a bully, he's a bully, right? He doesn't command he's not a locker room leader because he's a bully. He doesn't command respect. He just commands fear, essentially. Like, players are afraid of him. Like, Chris Paul doesn't listen to him out of respect, I don't think. Like, I think he's like, this dude is like a wild card. Like, I don't know what he'll do. And I think that was like Dave Yeager had a way of getting the most out of Barnes, like he did in Memphis. But right. I'm not sure that he's got much value. Like, if he gets waived, I think maybe he takes – if he gets if he signs anywhere, it might be his last place, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's out of the league now. Like, he just, because you're right, like, it doesn't, he can't even back it up anymore. He's not that good. Like, he's just not. So,
And you know, we know Spoelstra can reach out to players like this, but, you know, that's after a long training camp and having the amount of time it takes to build a chemistry and camaraderie.
And really only if there's upside. And like we just said, sure. Like, there's no more upside. His best days are behind him. But I want to move on.
Yeah, that's true.
So, going to take two questions and kind of put them together here. We got one comment. So one comment, one question. Here's the first comment. This is from Jake. That's it. I don't care what the Heat have to do. You got to keep James Johnson. This is, I think, after the Houston game, maybe. He had a good game. So he said, that's it. I don't care what you have to do. Keep James Johnson. That's the comment. Question from Jacques Leandre. We know how Pat Riley thinks when it comes to free agency, but do you think he has potentially changed his mind and sees this as our team going forward? This is really on the heels of going 14-2 over the last 16 games. So, kind of putting that all together, James Johnson is part of this team. I'm going to let you start here, David, because I'm interested to hear what you think.
I think we actually addressed a question similar to this
so
before.
I should say this. This is a question from the first part of our mailbag from last week, but we only published the second part of the mailbag because our first part of the mailbag was like half of it had to do with Serge Ibaka.
That's right.
And then
after
we were done recording it, Serge Ibaka got traded. It was all like our whole mailbag was about the Heat trying to trade for Ibaka, and then Ibaka got traded to Toronto. So we nixed it, and then we published the second part of the mailbag, and that's what our listeners heard, and I let them know, and obviously, but. I wanted to keep it and bring it back because we could still talk.
It does, but then it also ties into the question that the remaining question we have, I think, our fourth question, but we'll save that one because that there's shades differently there. Yes. But basically, as far as Pat Riley and his thinking when it comes to free agency, I don't think so. We've already heard at least rumors that he was, you know, trying to get a guy like Serge Ibaka. We can assume that there was probably some kind of kick the tires interest in DeMarcus Cousins, if nothing else, because of Cousins' incredible, if not generational type talent for his size and all the versatility that he does provide. So I think when you're looking at Riley and his overall methods or approach to free agency, it's always got to be in finding the best value possible, but also finding the person who's going to define your team moving forward. It's been his signature move for every franchise that he's been with for, and certainly for the Heat. The fact that his first move as the general manager of this team was to trade Glenn Rice and other pieces for Alonzo Mourning to swing a deal in 2004 once he realized that there was this incredible value in a young Dwayne Wade and to package other young players on the roster for Shaquille O'Neal who wanted out of Los Angeles. Again, that's a thing to do. In 2010, when he brought over the big three because, you know, obviously they wanted to play together with Wade, but they also wanted to compete for a championship, and they thought this was the best place to do it. I mean, that's always been his method of acquiring free agents or swinging for trades, and I think that's just the case. Now, you could say that he's building assets in whatever way possible, and maybe that's the case. He does have a first-round pick. He's got some players of decent value in Waiters and Johnson that are on relatively cheap contracts. But I think he's still looking to build the team around a superstar. And I think that that's still going to be his approach. If it's not going to happen at this trade deadline, it might happen during free agency. It'll happen at some point in the future. He feels, and I think we speak on the same subject, I think we feel the same way, that he feels he needs to build around a potential superstar or an established superstar. And I don't know that you look at this roster and necessarily see that. You see really good complementary pieces. We'd love, I think, James Johnson to be here long-term. He's still young enough. He doesn't have a lot of mileage on him. I think he's a guy who can add incredible value to your team as a role player, but you'd still want somebody who fits in the niche as a superstar player. And I don't see that person on the roster right now. As good as Dragic is, as good as Whiteside can be on occasion, I don't see either of them fitting in the label as a superstar.
And look, I like James Johnson, but
sure.
James Johnson falls into that same line as Deion Waiters and, you know, these guys that Willie Reed, guys that are on expiring contracts that are going to become free agents. Like, they're good to great role players, but it's not That's not the superstar. Those aren't the guys that are going to turn the team into contender. I mean, let's like realistically speaking, like how many more wins is Willie Reed worth? Like how many more wins a season is James Johnson worth? Like Deion Waiters, we know is worth a lot of wins. He's worth 13, but we're joking. But that's the big question.
I thought that was legitimate. I didn't realize that there was a joke.
Well, Kara White's also worth 13 wins, but there's going to be look. Riley is an opportunistic general manager. I'm not sure he's somebody that necessarily forces his way into all-stars, like as much or superstars. You know, as much as the Shaq trade was, like Shaq wanted to be in Miami. He wanted to leave LA and he wanted to play in Miami with Dwayne Wade. That was something that he wanted, and so Riley was able. Riley was going to just ride that roster out after they made the playoffs, right? Like with Caron Butler and Lamar Odom and all these guys.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then Shaq became available, and then he jumped on it. It's not like he forced the issue there. LeBron James and Chris Bosh wanted to play in Miami. I don't think that Riley necessarily recruited. Riley didn't recruit those guys from ground zero. That was a lot of Dwayne Wade and his relationship with those guys.
So it's to tie it back. I mean, it shows how much DeMarcus Cousins was valued by the front office, that they didn't make such a huge offer for him, that they didn't see him as being that potential superstar, or else you figure that Riley would have been willing to pounce on him.
So we look at, you know, Jimmy Butler and Paul George, for example. Those are like the other two guys that were on the trade rumor, you know, market, I guess, along with Cousins. And does he look at Paul George and Jimmy Butler as potential superstars? Maybe. And if he does, then he waits. But if not, he's going to settle, right? Because he's not going to go in that other direction. I guess we should get into this next question, because I think we're starting to hit this territory. This is from Daniel. Is the talk of, quote-unquote, landing a whale in free agency utterly unrealistic? Between the idea that stars want to play with stars and that the new CBA is designed to encourage stars to re-sign with their home teams or the teams that they're already on, I fear NBA purgatory for the Heat. So just kind of getting into that. Look, Riley doesn't view anything as purgatory, I don't think. We look back to those 90s era Zoe Hardaway teams. That was very much the Atlanta Hawks of their day, right? Like they were in the playoffs, they won a few rounds, but they were never real contenders, like title contenders. Like they never got to that level, and that was okay. Heat fans were really happy with that for the most part, unless, you know, they were losing to the Knicks, but you know, we were happy with that. And I think Riley, for the most part, he's spoken of basketball karma. As much as we view Riley as he wants to take the big swings and he'll accept nothing less than championships, I think he's mostly happy with just winning more than he's losing. I really feel that that's like, when it comes down to his basketball karma and his philosophy, he's like, we are just going to keep winning more than we're losing. And then because of how opportunistic Riley is and his ability to be able to take advantage of those opportunities, right? I think that's what he waits for. Let's win as many games as possible. I'd rather be in the playoffs and exit in the first or second round every year as opposed to be in the lottery every year, because that means at least we're winning more than we're losing. And when the player that becomes available wants to have a change of scenery, we'll make that change of scenery. But as Daniel alluded to here, the new CBA really discourages anybody from leaving because they're going to be leaving so much money on the table. So that now we're talking about trades. So that we're really still in the same kind of boat that we've been talking about. Maybe it doesn't happen in free agency. You're not going to get Shaq in free agency. You're not going to get, you know, a lot of players. You're not going to get them in free agency. But like the Pelicans did with Boogie Cousins, you could get them in a trade. And that's what Riley, I think, is going to be waiting on.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. And I always consider that, you know, we've looked at this, the potential impact of the CBA and how it could impact free agency. And I think a lot of people assume that that's the case because they assume that players are going to want to hang on to as much money as possible. And it's a pretty sizable amount what they'd be leaving behind. But I still think that there are a lot of reasons why players would want to sign here or sign anywhere other than whatever team drafted them. And I think quality of life is always something that we tend to discount, you know. And I think it happens a lot more often than we think about, you know, where you want to sign with a team that makes you happy because you've got an existing relationship with a coach or a player or or something along those lines. And I don't think that money necessarily drives them to do everything.
I think it will in the case of like the superstar players, right? Like you'll be able to get James Johnson or Waiters to take maybe a hometown discount, and players of that elk, you know, that caliber type player, but players that are really going to be involved in supermax discussions, which are like the Paul Georges and Boogie Cousins and these guys, like the superstars.
To prevent what happened with Kevin Durant this
exactly.
past.
Like they're going to be leaving roughly $80 million on the table to leave. Now, is it worth $80 million?
Yeah, I think they can. I think it can. I think between what they'll make and increase, and let's look at Durant's case in particular, because this is, you know, arguably the reason why the rule was changed in the first place. I mean, what he can make in sponsorship opportunities being in Golden State, or what he can do as far as, you know, a longer playoff run turning into title money and everything that comes with that. I think he'll wind up probably making just as much, you know. Or you know, and look at in Florida's case in particular, the absence of a state sales tax or income tax. I think that you can look at making $80 million more, say, in Oklahoma City. And, you know, while it's not quite the same amount, you'd be recouping quite a bit of that if you signed with Miami by not having the state income tax. So, I mean, I'm sure that there are much more specific numbers out there that I don't have access to right now.
Well, I think as far as the sponsorship thing goes, I think with the way that the media works now and just social media and every, like, I don't think that the small market versus big market thing is as big as a deal. Like, KD was like, you know, him and LeBron were the face of Nike when he was in Oklahoma. Like, it didn't matter. Like, I don't think KD makes any more. I haven't noticed any more of sponsors that KD is involved in since he went to San Francisco. Like, I don't.
Less, in fact, because Sonic is based in Oklahoma and he's no longer with Sonic. So I think that's a big blow.
That's a big blow for Sonic. anyway, maybe you could switch to In-N-Out. But,
You see, you're already thinking ahead there. I mean, look, I don't know. I think the idea here
is that they can't. I don't think that the Heat can rely on free agency the way that maybe they were planning on before the CBA was signed, or any team that was like the Warriors couldn't have relied on signing Durant. Like that becomes a much different conversation. I think Durant said on Bill Simmons' podcast that money was never even an issue. So maybe at the point where you're making so much money that you're like, I don't care about money. Maybe like you get a player every once in a while, but I think in general, for the history of sports and free agency, money talks, right? And that's like, I don't think that you could rely on it as much. And that's not to say that there won't be one-offs, like maybe Durant signs with Golden State regardless, but there's still going to be one-offs. There's always going to be outliers. There's still going to be one-offs, but in the general sense, it becomes a lot more difficult, and it throws a wrench into what the Heat are able to do and what they're able to offer. But they could also just do sign-and-trades. This was the same thing we saw with LeBron James. Like, they did the sign-and-trade so that they keep his bird rights off from the fifth year and all that stuff. Like, they did a sign-and-trade. Maybe that's something that teams are more willing to do now.
Possible. So, I mean, I guess the trade is probably the most realistic option for Miami to rebuild or to acquire their whale or their superstar player.
And that all going back to what does Riley do? Look, I think Blake Griffin might be a free agent. You talk to or try to talk to all the top free agents and we know Riley is going to chase those guys and he's going to offer what he can, and he's going to hope that maybe they say screw the money, I'm going to go sign in Miami. He hopes for that. And then when and if that doesn't happen, you re-sign James Johnson, Waiters, Willie Reed, all these guys, and you just keep pushing for wins and to win as much as you can. And maybe the Heat are in that NBA purgatory, but like I said, Riley prefers that than being in the lottery every year. That's the fact. Like, he's not Sam Hinkie. He's not going to do it. He's just going to say, "Let's just keep winning, and good stuff will happen." And that's basically his philosophy. All right, final question. This is from Claudia. With all the talk from Dwayne Wade about the Heat still being part of him and how he has been watching their games with interest, do you think that he regrets his decision to leave Miami, and is there any chance of him coming back? What do you think?
It's an interesting one. The first part of the question, I don't think he regrets it. I think players like him are always looking forward. Look, the franchise as a whole, that's the Heat franchise as a whole, always looks forward, never looks back. You know, when things end, like the LeBron James-led era in 2014 ended, you know, they just continued looking forward. And I think that's just the way most people, most successful people in general, tend to look forward rather than backwards. And I think for Dwayne Wade, I don't think there's any kind of regret on his end. I think he would have hoped to, perhaps that, you know, things could have worked out in Miami, but I think for now he's looking at Chicago and trying to make the most of that situation. And there are positives for him to be that close to home, to be part of that different team, just to, the experience of it. And I think part of what this question stems from, and Claudia, I don't know if she was thinking along the same lines or not, but there was a recent podcast from Adrian Wojnarowski over at The Vertical. And, you know, he spoke directly to Wade in a hotel room as they awaited a game the next day or something along those lines. And it was a very interesting conversation, a very intimate one. They got into a lot of details there. And to me personally, I could hear that there was still an emotional attachment there. Again, not necessarily regret, but that there was certainly an emotional attachment there for Wade in the organization. The way he spoke of it was absolutely the way that you speak fondly of a loved one or an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend of some kind, you know, something along those lines. Like there was definitely an emotional attachment. And he said it, look, this is my team. This will always be my team. Just because I'm playing Chicago doesn't mean that I don't feel like I'm part of the Heat franchise. And the way he was talking about Spoelstra and the camaraderie they've built over the years, I mean, there's definitely a connection. Again, not necessarily regret. If there's any chance of him coming back, it's not necessarily going to happen with this contract. It's just – it's too onerous for Miami to take on a player at 36 of declining skills getting paid $25 million a year. It's not going to happen. Either he'd have to get bought out – from his contract in Chicago, which seems a possibility if they could arrange for a very, very small amount as far as what the buyout is concerned, maybe next season. If he wants to join Miami next year on a playoff run after he gets bought out of the last year of his deal, that's a possibility. He does have a player option for the second year of his two-year deal in Chicago. I guess theoretically, if he's done after this season, looks at the Chicago situation, says, I don't care about the $25 million, I'll leave it on the table. I'd rather just play one more year in Miami before I you know, walk off into the sunset. That's an option.
I think he looks at also the 13-game win streak and just how much fun this Heat team has had. I mean, this Heat team has been bad, right? He looks at how bad this Heat team has been with such low expectations, but also how much fun they're having. And then you compare that to what's been going on in Chicago and the mess of a team and situation that is. Like, does he get along with Rondo? Is it just him and Jimmy Butler and all the locker room stuff? And he's looking around and he's like, this really, like, we have a better record than Miami and they're having way more fun than we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did give a lot of credit to Spoelstra for keeping everything going, to Riley and the whole front office. I mean, he was, again, he very, very effusive with his praise.
So I'm with you. And I think you're 100% on point when you say people like him do not have regrets. Like, they just don't. If they just keep moving forward, and that's it. I think maybe the only time that Wade has ever regretted leaving Miami might have been in, like, January or December, when it's just, like, the brutal winter of Chicago, and he's just like, I want to be in South Beach. I regret leaving. Maybe that's, like, the only time.
Yeah.
But
Have you heard the podcast, by the way?
I haven't.
Oh, there was a great one. I don't want to ruin it for all of our listeners, and nor would I recommend anybody listening to any podcast other than ours. But at one point there, he said to Woj that he tells his son at one point, you know, he was in another room, and he says, go in there and get my Heat shorts, because he was getting ready for a game or practice or something like that. And then his son looked at him like, what? He's like, oh, man, you know, and he even went into more detail. He said he looks at schedules and says,
I've heard this.
Oh, man, we got to be in Denver or we got to be in New York tomorrow or something like that. And he's still thinking that he's reading where Miami is going to be at next time. It's 13 years. It's clear that it's a huge impact. It's defined his whole NBA career. And the fact that he's been with Chicago for 6 months.
And doesn't help that Chicago's colors are really similar to Miami's colors, right? Like that.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine being Dwayne Wade. Like, that must be so confusing, and I completely understand it. I would be the same way, because I'm just like that. I'm just like, I'll completely space out and just do that. But look, I don't think he regrets it, but I do think that there is very clearly an emotional attachment. He has not said anything bad about the organization, and at first maybe we were thinking that was PR, but Maybe it was a lot of PR at first when those emotions were a little bit more raw. But since everybody's settled in and just gotten into the grind of the NBA season, maybe he's kind of settled in with his own feelings and those emotions are just still there. Like, they've never changed. And for him to keep saying, like, he doesn't have regret, but for him to say, I'm still part of the Heat organization, even if I play for the Chicago Bulls, is maybe a way of kind of, you know, coming to terms with the fact that he's not in Miami, but unwilling to leave the Heat organization emotionally. And that's to me what it sounds like. Now, as far as if there's a chance of him coming back, I think that it is too much. Whether it's on this next year or the year after, I think it's just too much of PR goodwill and PR currency and just like currency with the South Florida fan base to not have Wade come back to the Heat, even if it's for a season or a day for him just to retire as a member of the Heat organization. Sure. I think that it's just there's too much on the line for Wade and for the Heat organization to not be able to come to terms for maybe just one season at the end of his career, just to hang it up with the Heat. I think there's just too much at stake there for both teams. Just like I think that would just go such a long way with the Heat fan base for that not to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And from both parties, right? Not just right, the absolutely. Team.
For Wade's personal but for him brand. Himself. Yes, absolutely. Because Wade right now, if he retires today as a Bull, it's a lot different if he comes back and he's like the hero that returned to Miami and we give him a pat on the back and he says all of these right things. Like, he's saying all the right things. Like, I'm still a member of the Heat organization. I never left. Like, blah, blah, blah. Just because I play for the Bulls, I'm not, it doesn't make me not a part. Like, we'll say, no, he's always been here for us. He's always been a Heat. Even when he didn't play for the Heat, he's been a Heat. Like, that means something to us. For him to come back, he is, once again, the king of South Beach, Wade County. You know what I mean? Like, it's his town, and once again, and, like, every opportunity after that opens up, right? He owns South Beach. He owns Miami for the rest of his life, right?
Well, he's going to have to share it with Dion Waiters, clearly.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's as good of a place to leave off, right? Unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, that was perfect.
Okay, so that's all we have for today. Thank you to our sponsor, SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat. Or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.